tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
Where are we in the world today, right now? How close are we to world peace? How near now, after all of the heart-rending agony, the trauma of World War II, of Korea, of Vietnam, of the many crises in between, the more than 50 wars since 1945, the Cold War, the arms race, all of it. How close are we now to world peace, real peace, peace with justice? The laudatory goals of politicians the world over, it doesn't matter what flag they wave, it seems, or what language they speak, it all sounds like, in English, peace. But how close are we to world peace, where every one of us can get about the business of living our own lives with a feeling of tranquility, of security, with only the other usual domestic problems or personal problems, such as health and costs and taxes and whatnot, to bother? What are the indicators? Where could we go if we were to take the pulse of the world to find out how near are we now to world peace? Well, those indicators would have to be, I suppose, the geopolitical problems, the religious and the socioeconomic problems, the governmental problems, the various differing philosophical concepts between such nations as the Soviet Union and Communist China and the United States and European countries and the have-not versus the have countries. You know, it's quite a paradox. On the one hand, I can prove, because I have it on a source authority of absolute top authority, that we are much closer now to real, lasting world peace than ever before in world history. But it's quite a paradox, because every one of the indicators would make it appear otherwise, wherever you look. So let's take a look quickly at some of the indicators. What are they? First, what about the arms race? Well, we've hoped for arms limitations, we've hoped for inspections, we've hoped for diminution to the arms race, and yet when you get right down to it, we still have the nuclear stockpiles that are capable of obliterating 50 worlds like ours, and more than 40 nations await membership in the nuclear club. The diminution of the arms race is really about as much a figment of the imagination, an ethereal dream, an unreality, as any other attempt at arms limitations that you can point out in all of history, such as the London Conference, which merely blew the whistle for the Japanese to run back to Japan and build battleships and pocket battleships or cruisers of sufficient tonnages with sufficient weapons aboard so as to get around the arms limitations. This has always been true in man's history. Whether ancient savage communities tried to limit the size of the range of bows, or whether or not they tried to develop armor which would prevent the penetration of a steel shaft which was shot from a crossbow, one weapon gives rise to a counter weapon, and now we have come to that epitome of all time of the nuclear weapons and the means to deliver those weapons 45 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, half a world away, tactical nuclear weapons deliverable from missiles, from rifles, bazookas, mortars, from airplanes, and even from one man, one soldier, in his hand, throwing something of nuclear explosive force. Now we've come to the point where people are wondering, in the illicit traffic of arms, and in the various insurgent groups, guerrillas and rioters, terrorists and the like, that seek overthrow of government or seek overthrow of political parties within government, that eventually they are speculating whether or not some of these tactical nuclear weapons could even find their way into the hands of individuals or groups that are seeking the overthrow of countries. So the indicators in the arms race are that we are still in the midst of an arms race, and that no matter what our breakthrough with the Soviet Union, there is still Communist China. And there are still the European countries. Euratom, the European Coal and Steel Community, the European Economic Community, a coming United States of Europe, the eventual disintegration of NATO, and the recreation in its place of a powerful third power bloc in the world with its own nuclear arsenal and with its full avowed intent to develop and therefore to test and to perfect that nuclear capability. Let's not forget that France and Britain have the bomb. And let's not forget that Germany could have the bomb almost instantly and overnight. And there are many, many other countries that could do so. It's been estimated up to 40 of them, even Sweden. Highly developed technologies. Japan, certainly don't leave out Japan. Japan may already have developed the bomb without Western people knowing about it, because Japan is a very, very powerful super giant. When you look then at the paradox of the indicators toward world peace, and what are the chances when you look at nations, the way they act with each other, and the way they act in their own private sector, in their own community, the way they live with one another, as well as between other nations. What are the indicators by which you can judge the future course of world events and arrive at a conclusion about world peace and tranquility? Well, rather frightening. They're rather frightening because it seems no sooner is one enemy vanquished than another pops up to take his place. And I've been saying for many years on the radio programs that you hear that Vietnam is going to pale into insignificance in the minds of Americans, no matter the 10-year trauma of Vietnam, the divisiveness that practically rent asunder the nation, or so it would seem, in that horrible epoch of the 60s, the decade of the 60s, when we had massive political and domestic upheavals, riots, burning campuses and burning American cities, assassinations. We were to the point, some people began to wonder, a virtual civil war. And one of the very great catalysts in the whole thing was the Vietnam conflict and the anti-war demonstrators. But I have said through it all, no matter the agony of Vietnam, that soon Vietnam would pale into insignificance in the light of American deep concern and worry and even fright over developments inside Central Europe and the development of a powerful third nuclear power in the world is not the least of these. You will live to see it happen. So much for the arms race. It's a huge, a vast, and awesome subject. But these are the indicators. Now, what about the political philosophies? The total difference is, no matter what the apparent surface relaxations may appear to be, with the communist nations trading with the West, with mutual efforts in space, what are the, nevertheless, political, philosophical differences and approaches in the minds of these people between the various totalitarian states of the communist sphere? And I would also cite an emerging totalitarian state, which it eventually will be, of a United States of Europe, and the concept or the philosophy of the United States of America. We in the United States of America do not know why we are. We don't know what is our destiny. We have no real goal other than, well, we want to achieve world peace. And you will hear a newscaster say, analyzing world news, well, we've still got the problems in the Middle East. And it's almost as if we're saying, you see, the world is our own playground. We in America, we own the world. It's ours. The Mediterranean is our lake. The Middle East is a place that we wish those people would keep quiet because it disturbs our breakfast if we live in Kansas or Wisconsin or Iowa or Washington or Florida. We don't like to hear of these problems over there because that upsets us. No, it's their problem. And I find that many people in many countries around the world look upon the United States as a spoiled, apathetic, sleepy, lethargic giant that goes about its business in bumbling, carefree manner as if the rest of the world wasn't really out there, an increasing inward turn, an isolationist trend, a desire to pull ourselves into our own little time-honored ruts, enjoy our own lives, get into all of our own affluence, all of our own acquisitions of material wealth, and of temporary transitory pleasures, and let the rest of the world go by and just hope that they will all just shut up and suffer quietly, starve quietly, have their wars without getting us involved in them. This is an attitude. And in it all, America seems to have lost its goals, its purposes. World peace, is that our purpose? What are we doing to achieve it? Really, to achieve it. We don't have peace at home, peace in our own families, peace in our own social or governmental institutions. Unless we can learn to live at peace with ourselves, can we learn to live at peace with our fellows all over the world? America doesn't have a transcendental, supranational, high, lofty goal toward which we press. There is no single great visionary purpose for which we in the United States of America live beyond just having other people stay out of our personal private affairs and let us alone to live our own lives.
In today's world, too many people must get a job before they learn to develop their talent. Many have to resign themselves to their existence with not enough money for the home, car, or vacation they want. And so it goes even in the larger sense of world news and conditions. You learn to accept the unacceptable because you're only one person. What can you do? But if you're one of the many who often becomes frustrated over an article or broadcast about one injustice after another, you want to know, what can you do? The World Tomorrow program is involved with people and answers which are directly related to people. If you want to know more, request the free booklet, Come Help Humanity. It explains the organization behind this radio program, what it is doing and why. Come Help Humanity briefly explains the history and present involvement of the church, college, and individuals doing this work. Get involved. Request Come Help Humanity. Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
It sounds paradoxical for me to say, on the one hand, we are closer now to the beginning of a bright new world tomorrow, a happy, abundant, wonderful time of well-being, and of the real acquisition of the right goals and the right values for all of humankind than ever before. And at the same time, to turn around and tell you that all the physical, the political indicators would appear otherwise. It's a paradox that I will explain. When you look then at the political or the ideological or the philosophical differences between the West, the United States, which doesn't really seem to have any great transcendental goal, the United States is not going to come out and admit that it wants to rule the world or that it believes its form of government should be somehow gradually forced upon other countries. Now, we actually have got to come to realize sooner or later that there are differences in mind. Differences basically ethnically, hereditarily, from the basic makeup of different peoples. Believe it or not, there are peoples, families, groups of individuals on this earth for whom democracy is as foreign and as weird and as far out and as unacceptable and undesirable as it might be to visitors from outer space. We don't seem to know that. We don't seem to believe that. It seems to be hard for us to understand that there are communities of peoples on this earth who desire, with all of their being, because that's a part of their nature and their makeup, who desire a strong, powerful, totalitarian leader. It's true. It's a part of the very nature of some peoples. Now, I think tradition and history, if you look back, would indicate to you who these people might be, that there are people like that today, for whom democracy is only an experiment, and one which, under the surface and behind the scenes, they say, rather caustically, will never work in their country. The political philosophies are about as far apart as they have ever been, and the Soviets have not abandoned their desire for world conquest. We don't seem to realize in the United States that Soviets bargain only when it is in their best interest to do so, that they will back up 3 steps in order to take one more forward, and back up 1 and then take 3 forward, but only in order to keep on advancing when it is opportune to do so. The differences then between the various widely variable political and geopolitical philosophies are still there. And just because you have people traveling to the Soviet Union, or wheat going back and forth, or a combined effort in space, don't think for one instant that the communist leadership and the communist principle or philosophy of life is not completely at loggerheads with that of the United States of America and the free Western world, because it is. These are the indicators. Then what about the fact that 6% of the world's population enjoys about 50% of its wealth? That 6% of us are first-class passengers on our beautiful spaceship, and the other 94% are third, fourth, or fifth-class passengers. That about half of humanity goes barefoot. Far more than half of humanity is utterly illiterate. That people by the tens of thousands are starving to death, dying in nations such as India, Pakistan, well, Bangladesh and Pakistan now, and of course Central and South America, Africa, the have-nots of the world. We don't know how many people have starved, how many have been butchered and murdered inside China in the past several decades. But estimates run up into the millions, believe it or not. What are the indicators for world peace, so long as you have a tiny minority that has its hands on 50% of the total wealth of the world. But out there, you have vast, teeming populaces in ferment, desperate for the basic essentials of life, food, clothing, and shelter, that don't even have any of the amenities, let alone the luxuries of the West. How long could such a journey continue? Say you were in a, liken it to an airliner, and you have so much food aboard, and you've got 100 people, and 6 of them are up here in a kind of a private room. And they've got a couple of 3 stewardesses up there, and they got lots of booze and steaks, and they got everything to eat, and they got a wonderful card game going on, and so on. And in the back end, you got 94 people crowded in there with no room, no air to breathe, and they're in rags. They don't have good clothes on, but they can see through the window up there, all right. There's a plastic divider, but they can see these other people. I think that's fair in our analogy, because let's understand that via the motion pictures and television, magazines, world communication nowadays, that more and more peoples in the have-not countries are able to see life the way it's lived in the have countries. And they're more and more aware. And of course, the more aware they are, the greater the obvious disparity between the vast affluence and wealth of the have countries and the total poverty and squalor and sickness and disease of the have-not, or the so-called developing countries. So here in your airliner, you've got these 6 people up there with their feet on cushions and all the gals feeding them champagne and booze and eating their big steaks, and the other guy sitting back there with one little crumb, or he's got a piece of a potato peeling. He doesn't have a stewardess, and he's got maybe about 3 ounces of water to drink. Now, it's a right analogy, really, because that is just about the way it is divided up in the world community of nations. What are the indicators? What would you say the chances would be for, say, a 24-hour trip, when you know that the first-class passengers up there have got 10 times more than they need and they're never going to run out, but lots of your 94 remaining back there are going to get sick, and some of them may die. Now, some of them may die. Maybe 8 or 10 or 20 of them may be dead before that 24-hour period is over. You think there isn't going to be some kind of a movement among them to get up there and get some of the goodies before the trip is over? Well, these are the indicators. I don't think that's an unfair analogy at all, because when you really take a look at mankind, at all of the world, and we are all on a spaceship. You know, we've become more aware of that after the Apollo series and after man's footprints were placed on the moon. We become more aware as we were able to see ourselves and we began to see an Earth rise or an Earth set from the lunar landscape. We became a little more aware, I think, of the fact that we are a little speck of life in the midst of a Milky Way in which are, they say, billions and billions of suns, many of them perhaps thousands of times bigger than our sun, and our sun is 1.5 million times bigger than our Earth. And here is this one little gem in the midst of this one galaxy, which is just like a thin watch, you might say, with all these billions of stars, and who knows how many other planets lost in the shadow out there in our own solar system with the planets that we know. And we're like a tiny little speck of life taking an endless journey. We're going around all the time, you know, rotating around on our axis every single 24-hour period. Here we go. We travel every time we go to sleep. We wake up, we've moved from where we were in relationship, I suppose, to the planets in the solar system about 8,000 miles. But what's the trip all about? So it's a fair analogy. About 6% are traveling first class, and 94% are going with practically nothing. These are the indicators. The indicators, paradoxically, would predict anything but immediate world peace.
Radio news, paper, magazine,
television,
all report the news, but who really explains it?
Editorial,
documentary,
opinion,
survey, indicate trends, but who ties them all together? Plain Truth, the International Journal of Understanding.
Overview,
supplement,
insight.
Plain Truth explains the news. Plain Truth ties trends together. Articles include Personal from the Editor, featuring Herbert W. Armstrong's first-person contact with heads of state around the world. Garner Ted Armstrong's Speaks Out column. Bureau Report, editorial insight, and much more. If you've been looking for an explanation of the news, if you've been trying to tie trends together, simply request a free sample copy. Join the ranks of over 3 million subscribers who look to Plain Truth for understanding.
Overview. Supplement. Insight.
Plain Truth. Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
When you look at science, technology, commerce, industry, what are the indicators there? Do we hope for a scientific or technological breakthrough that via enough dollars, enough programs, enough breakthrough and new inventions and in the cure of disease, in the extension of lifespan and so on, that somehow we're going to bring the world a kind of a super mechanical, technocratic relief from all the miseries of these other 94? Take a look at technology all by itself, and this you ought to spend, you know, hours on. I could spend hours upon it, maybe I should, but I've done it in the past. What are the chances for us to have a significant breakthrough where we give or we bequeath to all the rest of the world the technological marvels that are enjoyed by that 6% of the world's first-class passengers? Well, first, what about pollution? What are the byproducts of development in the developed countries? Look at Japan. We've done whole programs on it. I don't want to get away and digress now from the subject at hand for that, but children that have to be brought in off the playgrounds and people, traffic policemen that have to go into gas, oxygen, and the like. Terrible, horrible pollution. To where you so pollute your environment because of technology intruding into the life support system that provides a good life for people, and you really can't supplant or replace just clean air and clean water and good food and a good night's sleep and exercise and plain health. I don't care how many pills you eat, or you drink, or you take, or you imbibe in one way or another, you've got to have those basic essentials. Can you imagine then, here's the Ruhr, the cradle, the heart, and the core of vibrant industrial and technological development inside the heartland of Europe. The Benelux countries, the big ports of Rotterdam and Amsterdam and Hamburg and Germany, and here is the giant pollution that comes along with it. Technology in the United States has threatened to bury us in solid trash, pollute the air that we breathe to the point it kills our trees and flowers and grass, strips the paint off our houses, disintegrates the statues in the public park, wears the weather stripping off our windows of our automobiles as well as our homes, maybe disintegrates and tears apart even the windshield wipers if you don't use them for a year or so, is able to destroy paint and metal surfaces, yet our lungs are asked to take it. And we want to take all of this and give it to other countries? Can you imagine, on a per capita ratio, what would happen if a country such as Vietnam, for example, were to have the same number of automobiles, television sets, telephones, double ovens, electronic devices and all of this that we have in the United States of America? Well, it would be catastrophe. It would be absolute catastrophe, and the world could not stand the impact. Now, those that really study, the think tanks, the Club of Rome, the Hudson Institute, have taken these indicators that I'm talking about, and they've waded out into the future with them. And as a matter of fact, in the preliminary Club of Rome report, they had done not only this, but in different manners in which they would say that they were going to have a supposition that world population could remain exactly where it is. Let's say, talking about population for the moment. So they said, suppose it remains exactly where it is. And then they put all this business of overcrowding, of rising GNP, of depletion of non-renewable resources. That is especially important. Natural gas and bituminous substances and so on. Coal and oil, fossil fuels, in other words. All of the energy and the power sources available to man. And they wade out into the future with these curves, these charts, and these graphs. And they began to indicate, and maybe we can say that doesn't concern us because they did go clear out into the 21st century, the 22nd century. But they show that another 100 years or so, the world has had it anyhow, even if you stop population right where it is. The indicators that they chose were the very same ones I'm talking about. Talking about stopping the arms race right where it is. Talking about stopping world population right where it is. Talking about doubling world food production, which is impossible. But talking about it and wading out into the future with these indicators, nevertheless. And still, the predictions were anything but rosy. So when you look at commerce, industry, technology, the signs are not good. Growth tends to still be cancerous because human greed and lust, human covetousness, the desire of the few for more, still enters into the picture. And we still do not, as rational thinking human creatures, consider the hazards versus the benefits. If the benefits are there and they are obvious, we don't say, shall we or should we build it? Should we sell it? Should we market it? Should we invent it and design it? We ask, can we and will it sell? Presumably, if you could build an airliner which was 1 mile long and would require an airstrip 15 miles long and could lift 15,000 people into the air, then I suppose it would be done. Now, already it's gotten to the point to where the ground support technology of getting these people into the airliner and back out again is laughable, where you spend more time, if you're going from Los Angeles to New York, the chances are, in getting up, preparing, driving down the freeway, waiting in line, getting into the airplane, and then getting out and getting your baggage and getting ground transportation and going to where your final destination is. You put the two together and they average out about half and half. You spend about as much time getting there and getting into the thing as you do in the actual flying time itself, depending, of course, upon the length of the trip. The indicators are not good. In spite of these many failures, there is still going to be ultimate success. Write for that booklet, The Modern Romans, that appraises the American spirit, what we're doing in our private lives among and with each other, in our homes and families, the way we're living life, and what's happening to our patriotism. It shows you how every last one of the major reasons for the decline and the eventual collapse of ancient Rome is with us as a major social issue, an economic or a political issue, right now, today. The stable Roman family just didn't last. Changes rapidly began to take place in the social life of Rome that destroyed the family. Children began to rule over their parents, and Rome began to have a juvenile delinquency and a youth gap between the elderly and the young. Divorce began to get epidemic in ancient Rome. And you will see how all of that happened, exactly what led to it, and how that's precisely what is happening to our Western societies today. All of these points are clearly stated in this booklet, The Modern Romans, The Decline of Western Civilization. It showed how agriculture was in trouble, the economy was in trouble, joblessness became rampant, and the military even threatened insurgents or the overthrow of government. This booklet, The Modern Romans, will put you in the picture in modern-day United States of America, Canada, Britain, Australia, South Africa, and other countries, and show you how our Western English-speaking world is going the way of ancient Rome. It's free of charge, it's graphically illustrated, it has full-color pictures throughout, and it costs you nothing, only the price of a stamp and an envelope. While you're at it, why don't you request the current number of The Plain Truth and find that there is a solution beyond human understanding. And we talk in The Plain Truth, plainly, even about Bible prophecy and about an ultimate solution beyond the acknowledgement of today's news media, because they simply do not acknowledge God or Bible prophecy. And that's what you will read in The Plain Truth. It is Plain Truth, straight from the shoulder, plain talk. I hope you'll write for it. We'll send it to you by return mail as soon as you dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444. Or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your request along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.